Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Hutton Orbital Live. Hang on. Norma, what on earth are you doing?
Sorry, just trying to find somewhere for my new pot plants.
Where on earth did you find that monstrosity?
Well, there was this meteor storm, lots of green flashing lights in the sky, and then I found it just lying on the ground, looking poorly, so I rescued it. Been feeding it back to health again.
What have you been feeding it? It looks terrifying.
Sausages, mostly. Don't do that, Lou. You'll upset Audrey.
Audrey?
Well, I had to give him a name. He's so cute, in an ugly and toothy kind of way.
Ah! It's got me finger!
I did warn you. Naughty Audrey, that isn't a sausage. Now put Lou down.
Norma, why don't you take it through to the green room? There's lots of lovely people to eat in there.
Don't you mean meat?
Well, some of them qualify as meat, I suppose.
Oh, okay then. Audrey, you behave. No chewing on the guests.
And on that note, it's time for us to get on with the headlines. It's Penguin's revenge, as he's doing the unwrapping for once.
Who's been helping with station repairs?
Rat rescue required record readily reached recently.
It's one for all, and all for one in Hanky's clone army.
Cannon haven't yet got a Scooby.
We don't know how it's really done, and we're sticking to it.
This is the bit where you go get a drink, I'm guessing.
Your community events, the very definition of shenanigans.
First this evening, news has come in from the carrier MPV Everest that refueling operations to Casey Station on New Antarctica have been completed. Accompanied by mission leader Commander Dogsbreath, as well as representatives from both the Fuel Rats and Cannon Interstellar, the specially adapted carrier has offloaded cargo and scientific teams, as well as enough fuel to power the station for at least another year. The mission hasn't gone without some concerning close encounters of the native animal life kind, with a series of attempted thefts of valuable fuel rat and cannon equipment attributed to what can only be described as a particularly curious penguin. Having met the team when they landed, this penguin magpied his way into their equipment locker and began hoarding anything that looked even remotely shiny, including tools, mugs, water bottles, and the avian cheese. At least someone likes it, and of course the leftover Thargoid resin in the bottom of one of Cannon's canisters. The onboard Fuel Rat team completed their mission, having deployed a security team to keep the mischievous flightless kleptomaniacs at bay, and all 700,000 tons of fuel were delivered without further incident. With a solar storm predicted, the Everest had to beat a hasty retreat without saying goodbye to the science team that were offloaded with the cargo, returning back to Hutton Space ready for speed reloading and a second mission to the next Arctic research base. There are, however, reports of strange noises coming from within the depths of the ship, and tales of things going mysteriously missing, so they may have a stowaway.
The most recent Thargoid invasion was repelled, and repairs were made quickly. Much, much quicker than ever before. It is because the Thargoids have gone soft and are only delivering love taps instead of deadly blows. It has been said that it's not because the Thargoids are weaker, but because we're strong. We're better at repairing. and that this is due to the use of fleet carriers and their ability to carry enormous quantities of materials and a seemingly infinite number of ships. Have you noticed that no matter how many ships land on a fleet carrier, with a little bit of work, it's still possible to store more of them? This is puzzling. And we've been investigating how this all works. We tracked down an individual who runs what he calls a fleet carrier. But quite frankly, we're not convinced. Surely a fleet carrier should be more than 2.5 meters tall, should not have the word police on the front and a blue light on top. The captain, who doesn't look much like a medical practitioner to us, surely that scarf could harbour any number of germs, and I'm not accepting jelly babies from anyone not inside my support bubble, thank you very much, does nevertheless have a soothing voice, once that's often heard around midnight, he says. He explained that his vehicle must be a fleet carrier. There's infinite storage capacity, so it's bigger on the inside. People who go on board often end up unexpectedly on the far side of the galaxy, and week after week, it runs into the same deadly enemies, creatures housed in a metal shell that attack without warning, crying, "Incinerate!" as they set fire to stations. He did apologise for once a long time ago, materialising inside the showroom area of Hutton Orbital and depositing an anaconda that we've never been able to get rid of, but promised to come back one day and dismantle it with my sonic. Whatever that means.
The Fuel Rats, those crazy, lovely, magnificent group of commanders that give up their time and credits for no benefit other than to help out their fellow pilots, regardless if they're a new player caught out by an unfamiliar galaxy, if they're an experienced pilot who just wanted to see what happened when they used Jumponium to get to a distant star, or even if they've been a little worse for wear and gone for a lie down for a few hours whilst leaving their ship to sail right past their destination and return to their cockpit to find their ship a long, long way from any scoopable star, no idea of the direction of the nearest fueling station, and no container to get fuel in even if they made it. Well, those fuel rats have been baking a cake with an extraordinary number of candles. They're celebrating reaching their 100,000th rescue. And for people who use base 10 to count, that could be seen as a significant number. Their 100,000th customer was Commander Fertz Newcomb, who wins 20 tons of fuel, a canteen of cutlery, and 15 minutes to dash around their local commodity market and take away everything they can fit in their trolley. The rescuers, and it's to them that we tip our hats, were Commander Tubbleflip and Commander Julius Zett, aided in dispatch by Commander Delrin. You will probably have seen the competition that was run by the Fuel Rats to design a poster to celebrate this milestone, and we'll be showing you a vidcast of the entries later in the show. We hope that the Fuel Rats may continue their charitable work for a long time, and if you need big breasts to blow out your candles, Norma has volunteered.
Cloning is outlawed in many parts of the galaxy, despite the medical risks associated with reduced lifespans for clones having been mainly mitigated by the swift application of performance enhancers, nanomeds, and anti-Adriatic drugs. It's considered a highly unsafe practice. Needless to say, with the right amount of cash and the right contacts, anything's possible, as can be seen with the ongoing replication of one of King Hanky of Clonia. The ethical side of the equation is to whether you want tens or even hundreds of facsimile copies of you running around the galaxy. Accused of obtaining a loitering finding one particular system, good luck proving that it was clone number 3. He's got your fingerprints, your DNA, your iris scan, and in fact, barring any industrial accidents or dodgy Barnet, it is you in every way possible. With the latest in neuroscience, he may even well have your accent, your memories, and all your little personal foibles. He could insult you to your face, and you take the blame. He could insinuate himself into your household and leave the toilet seat up, and you'd be the subject of scorn. That situation where your dodgy clone, and you are in the same location at the same time, and both pointing at the other, saying, "But he's the imposter." Yet another danger of sticking yourself in the station photocopier and hoping for the best. King Hanky, though, took it one stage further when, on one furtive foray into a bounty hunting expedition, accompanied by Hutton truckers, had a close encounter of the clones go bad kind. Yes, there was another Hanky in system, not safely tucked aboard the megaship where all the other ones are, but flying a starship, and what's more, wanted, and illegally seizing goods from other vessels. King Hanky, what we assume is the real one, though we're not sure now, appealed to Tucker's better nature and asked them not eat out the usual justice that is fixed into the state, but in confusion as to who the real Hanky was, they opted to cash in on the bounty and ask questions later. The clone was duly picked up by a passing security patrol and is being taken to a local detention centre, where it will be processed, tried for crimes against Hutton, and then incarcerated until such time as he can pay his bills. Until such time as it's possible to distinguish between the clones, this one has been fitted with a digital tattoo containing his own criminal record. If you see a Hanky acting suspiciously in your vicinity, ask him to show a little bit of ankle to reassure yourself that you're not about to become a victim of the clone roster Hanky imposter. You know where your clone is at 5 a.m? If the answer is Dirty Dancing and listening to pounding techno music, it will be the least of your worries. As the Marlinists would say, Theta 7, Commander, Theta 7.
Talking of Theta 7, the latest galactic who and why and where done it has been unleashed on the galaxy with the discovery today of a mysterious SOS signal from deep space, appealing for any ships in the area to come to the rescue of one serene harbour. As is usually the case, the boffins at Canon Interstellar have donned their tinfoil hats, put down the tin of biscuits, and loaded up the Canon mystery machine with ascots and Scooby snacks and headed out to get to the bottom of everything. A number of commanders began the search, said to be in a volume of space 4 Draxors in size. A Draxor is defined as a sphere 50 light years in radius from a single point in space, and named in honour of one Commander Draxor, who, in one of her earliest missions, decided it was a cunning plan to deliver one Hutton mug to every station within 50 light-years of Hutton, a precursor to the highly successful Hot Mess mission to mug every single station. Since that date, a Draxor has entered the Galactic Dictionary as a 50 light-year sphere. However, we digress. With a volume of 4 whole Draxors to search, that's 80 light-years from the starting point, hundreds of commanders set forth to come to the aid of the Serene Harbour. This is where it goes all a little bit Scooby-Doo. Is the message legit? Is there someone else hiding under the mask? What does it have to do with NMLA? And as a famous movie character once said, "What's in the box?" The official Galnet News, no, not the Galnet News Digest, which is always on point, but the other one, has been struggling to keep pace with galactic message boards, which are rife with both scans, logs, and tinfoil hat conspiracy theories as to what the blazes is going on. But as far as we can tell, something bad has happened to someone bad in a bad place. And they were doing bad things, but the bad people they were doing bad things to turned bad when subjected to bad things, and the whole situation went wrong. We'll leave it to the Galnet News Digest to make head, or possibly tail, out of what's going on. But in the meantime, here's the next article.
Linking to the last article and the forthcoming Galnet News Digest together nicely, there has been speculation in recent weeks about physics. More importantly, the physics of orbitals. Commander Fosdyke, celebrity photographer and investigator, has found himself at the heart of a brouhaha this week after his latest series of photographs of sleeping celebrities. We won't ask why he's papping people in their sleep, as it's a little creepy. Appear to show commanders and their companions aboard ships and stations accompanied by objects that aren't floating around. Speculation as to how the blanket state is put have ranged from magnets to Velcro and even some strange ceiling contraption. with a fan that blows you when you're in bed. What we're more concerned with is how the steaming hot cup of beverage in a Hutton-style mug actually works. Do Hutton mugs and the frameshift effects actually keep your drink within their boundaries as well as keeping them warm? Is the secret to anti-gravity hidden at the bottom of the scrap-made mug? How do they work when you tip them in zero-g? Do you need a straw or a sippy cup lid? Do you have to suck the contents out? We leave all of that to Commander Witherspoon and instead focus on the Fosdyke. What was he doing in that bedroom? Is the photo a cunning manipulation of a planet-side original, substituting the galactic view out of the window in place of the original vista over rolling countryside? Where are his subjects getting their Hutton mugger-likes from? From what we can tell from the reaction on our sister station, Wave Radio, you could all be a storm in a mug. But until we get the licensed Odyssey excursions to orbiting platforms, we won't be able to fully investigate what the blazes is going on. More later.
Well, a wise man once said, you can't please all of the people all of the time. And to be fair, who'd want to? There are a large number of people I'd much rather annoy than please, but I digress. Being truckers and faithful followers of a dog of ill repute, we are a generous and joyful bunch, in our own selfish and grumpy kind of way, and sometimes we do manage to please all of the people, for a time. For the explorers, we're pretty much steady across the board. There are a few issues as always, but nothing all hands on deck. So you can be happy that you're free to do what you enjoy the most, buggering about in the black, finding stuff that nobody cares about. For the miners, yes, ers, not minors, this is not a PG broadcast, and anyway, they should be in bed. They have to get up early to clean those frameshift drives, okay? Right, for the miners, you can be happy that we're mostly in boom, so you can do what you enjoy the most and get the maximum rewards from our flourishing markets for your spoils. For the traders, you can be happy that not only are we in boom, but we're pending an outbreak in Epsilon Indy. And we all know how much you love exploiting that market. And finally, for the combat pilots, we have civil unrest in Barnard Star. Why should that make you happy? Well, guess what the best way to stop civil unrest is? A demonstration that crime will not go unpunished. Yes, bounties. Get to Barnard Star and punish those pirates, smash those smugglers, nail those ne'er-do-wells, and generally crunch criminals. Oh, and Hanky says everything's fine in Colonia too. Over to Norma.
The Pilots Federation is not the only place to look for community activities. Our community itself is full of adventures whose rewards, unlike one of Flossy CG's, may not be huge, may not be a new module for your ship or millions of credits, but the emotional rewards can be far greater. Real PWP events to bring you closer to your fellow truckers, sometimes close enough to have to remind them of social distancing rules, and that for some, the wearing of masks is not just about hygiene. So here are details of events we know about. The Elite Races have a busy weekend planned, with separate events on Saturday and Sunday. As you might have seen and heard in the Pirates Federation broadcasts before we came on air, on Saturday 30th of January, the Elite Races have an SRV event, Round 7 of the Scarab Mastery Championship, starting at 1800 UTC in the Delcar system. You can join their Discord at bit.ly Elite Races Discord for details. But to whet your appetite, we can tell you that there will be hill climbs, canyon jumps and downhill events. They also have a ship racing core event coming up this weekend on the 31st of January, 1800 UTC, at Fisher Terminal in Okinawa, racing around the station superstructure. Details are in our Discord channel, bit.ly, Elite Racers Discord, and also see the Fisher Terminal tab in the sheet at bit.ly EDC sheet for the layout and walkthrough. Last week, we covered the early news of Eros Maidlung's indecision and abdication of responsibility regarding the route for his fleet carrier FTP Isherhan, where he's asked everyone else to respond to a poll to decide every week or so in what direction the fleet carrier should travel. The voyage starts on February the 5th, and there's an event on our Facebook page for it. Plus, there's a post where the poll is taking place, and there are some pretty graphics for everyone to look at and wonder what the heck they mean. And the quick way to get there is bit.ly/helpEros. He's promised us updates as the voyage progresses, assuming that they actually make some progress, and the votes aren't all 52-48. Eros says tritium orders are up, and if people are planning to come along, it's all aboard the crazy thing. The mass hut and run event was held on Saturday, and the organiser, Commander Bam, has sent us this report with all of the facts filtered through the bottom of a bottle of Centauri Mega Gin. At a chosen hour in unchosen systems, commanders started to gather. Their goal to get to Hutton as fast as humanely possible. Each commander had made a calculated decision based on galactic time, orbital velocities, mass, boost speeds. No, hang on. That's rubbish. They guessed and picked a system at random to start their speedrun to Hutton orbital. For one commander that I won't mention by name, just getting within jump range of Alpha Centauri proved to be a problem. The fuel rat may have been required, but he clicked the self-destruct button instead of the fuel of the rat signal, by mistake. I'm not sure Commander Babster had his stream running at this point. A fleet carrier was in place with several commanders ready to act as wing beacons to drag our races out of supercruise, and as they departed their chosen starting weight systems, wings were formed, beacons fired up and navlocks engaged. The race was underway. What followed was nail-biting 1 hour 20-ish minutes of immature banter, mainly based around booze, double entendres, politics and Animal Farm. No, not that version. Oh, okay, it was. Skip forward a bit and our first arrivals face the nightmare of docking permission denied, courtesy of Red Planet Taxis. I mean, who the hell takes a taxi to Hutton? Everyone in the galaxy knows noxicabs are cheaper and faster, even if you do have to wipe down the cabin before you sit down. A plan was formed by the pilots present to reserve landing pads and then turn down the docking offer seconds before the next racer exited supercruise in an attempt to keep the landing pads free. Soon a steady stream of commanders were dropping out of supercruise and making a dash for the landing pad, hoping to be faster than the previous pilot, then making a complete pig's ear of aligning with the pad and deploying landing gear. This is the Hutton way. There may or may not have been shenanigans involving non-consensual contact, beam lasers and missiles that accidentally caused Dead Meat GF Sidewinder to recycle itself, and Commander Cully 388 may have had to run like a big girl's blouse due to hull integrity. A huge 07 to Amelia for doing two runs after not being totally satisfied with the first attempt. Most people find the second time takes longer to arrive, but this was not the case for our Amelia. By the end of the evening, the standing record time had been smashed by a whole second by Commander Hardy, reclaiming his record time from Commander Overlight, putting the fastest official time to Hutton orbital at 1 hour 22 minutes 20 seconds, a whole 11 seconds faster than Brett Riverboat, who held the record for almost an entire year. A big thank you to Commanders Hardy, Jintosh, Janix, Cully 388, Deadmeat GF, Little Baker, Amelia, Sox, Monty, Rincewind, Overlight, Vector 833, Immortan Joe and Janix for taking part and making the Hutton run a PWP activity. And that's all the news we have this week about community-led events. Please let us know if you are organising one, or even if you just see one popping up maybe on Discord or the forums, so we can reach as many commanders as possible and spread the word.